Looks like we have just about everyone with us, so I am going to get started. I'm happy to welcome you all to this new adventure for the Aging and Disability Resource Center, which is a way for us to connect with each other in these very weird and stressful times. Unfortunately, I'm going to start off by confusing you. My name is not Rebecca Dutter. My name is Helen Sampson, and I am the quality coordinator for the Aging and Disability Resource Center using Rebecca Dutter's Zoom account. So we have a great panel of folks to share some ideas and thoughts with you today, and we're very much hoping that this is an enriching experience for you. As we go through the next hour and a half together, I really want to ask you to be thinking about what it is that you're finding that you may need at this time as a caregiver. We really want to hear about that at the end during our question and answer period. So be thinking about that through the conversation. This is new technology for all of us. We're, a little anxious about it all going well, but I'm hopeful that everyone can hear. And I want to point out a couple of things that may help you if you are new to Zoom. If you take your mouse to the black screen where all of our faces are, in the upper right-hand corner, you will see you have an option of speaker view or gallery view. And that will change how your view is. So that's one thing. The other thing is at the bottom, you can click on Manage Participants, and you can see all of the participants in the side column. I do have everyone muted now, as I have said a couple of times. That's really what we have discovered is important to making a good experience. Next to that Manage Participants, there is a chat button, and you can see if you click on that button that we've already started a chat here. I have a little welcome, and then Rachel has sent me a message, but you can send a message to everyone. That's a good way to communicate if you're having any technical difficulties, like hearing us okay, or if you have a question that you want to write down in the chat box so you don't forget it. We will come back to those as a way to manage our question and answer period, as well as you can unmute yourself just by clicking on the little red button next to your name. We're going to ask everybody to hold their questions until the end so we make sure we get this important information out to all of you. There is one other thing I wanted to share with you. I'm not sure everybody has gotten all the handouts that are available today. So I'm going to do something really tricky here. Maybe I will. Yes, I'm going to. I'm going to share my screen so that I can show you where the documents are on our website. So let's get rid of that. This is the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center website. And you can get there by Googling Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center. You can type adrc.kenoshacounty.org into your address bar. Do not put the www in front, just adrc.kenoshacounty.org. And this brings you to our website. Under the events tab here, hopefully you can see, if you click on that, it will take you to our events, which this is really the only one going on at the moment. And then if you click on the webinar for today, you will see all of these documents attached here. So you are welcome to come here and print out what you would like or what you find helpful. Okay, let's see. I have to stop sharing now. And we have with us three wonderful experts from the Aging and Disability Resource Center and a nurse from the Public Health Department. So we're going to start by talking with Susan Johnson, who was our dementia care specialist. She's going to give a little overview of some of the issues she's seeing caregivers really having to confront. Then we are going to turn to Bridget Cardinale, who is the public health nurse, and she's going to talk a little bit about COVID-19 and what those concerns are. Renee Mache, who is one of our long-term care specialists, is going to talk about resources. And then Lisa Keenan, who teaches our Powerful Tools for Caregivers class and runs our Volunteer Guardian program, is going to talk a little bit about self-care, and then we will end up with your questions and answers. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Susan.
Good afternoon. It's good to be with you all. I hope you're all doing well today. It would be an understatement to say that these are challenging times. It's becoming clear to all of us that we have a ways to go before we as a nation regain our equilibrium, right? A quote from Winston Churchill has been used to sum up the current state of affairs, and you may have heard this. At the conclusion of one of the early battles in the North African campaign of World War II, he said, "Now this is not the end. It is not even the beginning of the end. But it is perhaps the end of the beginning." There is a lot we don't know yet about COVID-19. But one thing we do know is that we have to settle in for the long haul, right? And what exactly does that mean for caregivers? Should you be doing anything differently? Some of you have been in the long haul for a very long time already. Others of you might be connecting with this event today because you understand that older adults and people with chronic health conditions are at higher risk of serious illness from COVID-19, and you want to be prepared for stepping into the caregiver role should that become necessary. Today, we're going to share some tools and strategies with you that will help equip and sustain you on this journey. I've had the very great privilege of working with caregivers for some time now. And I think you'll agree with me that caregiving has always involved a tension between focusing on the present while preparing for the future. This was true before COVID-19, and it's even more important now. But caregivers often struggle with this because the immediate needs seem more important. They're happening right now, and frankly, those immediate needs can be pretty all-consuming, can't they? You all have your own particular challenges. Many of you are caring for people with chronic conditions, which require ongoing management. Your loved one may also have dementia. People with dementia are confused and upset by the change in routines that are occurring now. That will smooth out over time as you develop a new routine. But in addition, they're not going to understand or be able to easily follow instructions on frequent hand washing and other measures to help keep them safe that you might be trying to add to your routine. And to add to these stresses, most caregivers are experiencing isolation to a new degree. I know some of you are caregivers of a loved one in a facility. How frustrating and sad that you cannot be doing the things you used to do for them as their caregiver because of necessary visitation limits. You cannot easily lay your eyes on them to see how they're doing, but you are finding new ways to connect. I believe there are ways that you can adapt what I'm going to be speaking about to your situation. And we can also try to address some of your questions and concerns during the question and answer period at the end of our presentations. In the next few minutes, I have three main goals. Number one is I want to help you understand the critical importance of planning ahead to handle the very real possibility of either you or your loved one or both of you becoming ill with COVID-19. The public health nurse, Bridget, will speak to this in the next presentation, but it's important that you understand that COVID-19 is not like the flu. It requires a different approach to care than other illnesses. Number two is I want to explain what a care plan is, how to develop yours, and how this tool will help provide a path forward for you and provide peace of mind. And the third thing is I want to talk to you about an essential part of a care plan that is often neglected, and that's a backup plan. A backup plan or emergency plan is a way of recognizing and addressing possible future needs before they arrive. So let's begin with care plans. There is a care plan tool on the website that Helen just showed you, and you can print that off and adapt it for your own purposes. Or we can mail it to you. It has spaces for you to fill in the important information about your loved one's care. At a minimum, it needs to include important information about their medical care. And you may already have something like this, but a written care plan is simply a tool for you to use to keep important information about your loved one organized and in one place for easy access for you and for anyone else who may need it. And it includes their health conditions, medications, healthcare providers, and emergency numbers at a minimum. And also the one on our website has a place for you to mark whether or not there's an advanced directive or a living will, and you should attach those documents to it too. It's also a good place to list resources for you, the caregiver, so you've got everything in one place. And they have found that having a care plan helps reduce ER visits and hospitalizations and can just improve overall general medical management. As part of your care plan, I encourage you to expand your care team. What do I mean by a care team? Besides the medical professional you're already working with and who assist you, a care team is simply the people in your circle who can be called on to help you with errands and other needs so you can limit both your and your loved one's exposure to the coronavirus. A care team will help you conserve your energy and it will decrease your feeling of isolation. For example, one of the challenges you may be facing is keeping an ongoing inventory of food, medications, medical supplies, and equipment, and keeping the recommended 2-week supply on hand. This is something that could be delegated to a member of your care team. So a care plan needs to include the names of the members of your team and their contact information, and even what tasks they are helping you with. And if you need help thinking of people who could be on your team, I once heard someone quip, make a list of everybody you've been nice to. That would be a good place to start. You're going to be hearing about resources and services that can help you later in the program, but now is the time to be thinking about how to expand your circle of support from family and friends as your first line of defense. If you're listening to this presentation and you are the adult child of parents, where one of them is the primary caregiver of the other, you are going to need to be more involved. Don't wait for them to reach out to you. They may be reluctant to do so for a variety of reasons. Help them take that first step of accepting assistance by suggesting ways that you can help ease the burden and by sharing the information you're learning here with them about why this is so important. Several extra documents need to be added to your care plan. One is a daily schedule for your loved one. Briefly explain their normal routine so that if someone needs to step in, they know how to manage the day-to-day so that person they're caring for maintains a sense of security that is so important. If the person has dementia, in fact, it's really critical. The substitute caregiver will also need to know something about their behavioral symptoms. What is it that you're managing now? And they'll need to know how to manage those. So leave some suggestions and help for them. The second document you need is a backup plan. This is probably the most important thing I'm going to say to you today. Why is a backup plan important? What happens when we fail to plan ahead? Our options are limited because we have to make decisions in a hurry, and we might find ourselves settling for something that, with a more thoughtful approach, would not have been our best choice. Too often, I have witnessed situations where this happens. We deal with the present and we believe that the future will take care of itself. This is true to a certain extent, but failing to plan and prepare makes us helpless victims of circumstances rather than thoughtful participants in managing our lives. Does having a plan mean that everything will go smoothly? We've all been around long enough to know the answer to that. But it does give you a degree of control and the knowledge that you are doing what you can. Truthfully, every caregiver needs a backup plan, whether we're in the midst of a pandemic or not. But let's apply this to COVID-19. Because of the nature of this illness, the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, has issued particular instructions on what to do if you are sick or if you're caring for someone who is sick. You need to familiarize yourself with these, and the public health nurse will help us with this next. But there are instructions on the CDC website that you could print out and have with your care plan. Very importantly, though, who have you lined up to take over the care if you become ill? I am sure as a caregiver, there have been many days where you have been ill and still carried on with your caregiving duties. If you become ill with COVID-19, you will have to be isolated, and you will need someone to care for both you and your loved one. Who is that person going to be? When speaking with caregivers about this, I've had them say something to me like, "My daughter will do it." This may be true, but I strongly encourage you to sit down and have that conversation with family members. Make sure everyone has the same understanding and expectations. Make sure they know about and understand your care plan. Make sure you have the care team in place to provide extra assistance. Some of you I know may not have family members to rely on for care. Perhaps there are church members or others who would be willing to step in. Please give the ADRC a call so we can work on this with you. And I want to conclude with this thought. Each of you is in a unique situation, and you are the experts on your families. But I hope you will see that adapting this information to your unique situation and taking the steps I've described would be the kindest thing you can do for yourself, for your loved one, and for your family. If you would like help with figuring out some aspects of your plan, we at the ADRC would be very pleased to discuss this with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. I'm going to turn it over to Bridget Cardinale from the Public Health Department, who are our local heroes these days. And we so appreciate her taking time with us today. Bridget.
I'm going to try to share my screen and hopefully everybody can see. So I do have a, I've never shared it on Zoom. So give me a second. Is that something anybody can see yet?
Not yet, Bridget.
Okay.
Once you share, then you have to, it takes you to a different looking screen and you have to hit something again.
Okay, let me see if I can go back to that. Sorry, everybody, hang in there.
It's all right. We're all very patient with ourselves these days in technology. Bridget, I'm going to try making you the host and see if that will help you.
Okay. All right, share screen.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Something's happening. There we go.
All right. Okay. Okay, so it's a PowerPoint, and it has about 5 slides with actual substance in it. But I wanted to take the time just to review a few basic things, what the symptoms of COVID-19 actually look like, when to call a medical provider, steps to take for prevention, what isolation and quarantine looks like. You might be advised to isolate or quarantine. So I want to make sure everybody understands what that is asking of a person, and how to find further information. First, the symptoms of COVID-19, they can be anywhere from mild to severe. They can appear 2 to 14 days after the exposure to the initial case. Most common symptoms are fever, cough, and shortness of breath. But there is an arrangement of other symptoms that we're hearing along with COVID-19 other than that. The reasons that people are seeking out additional care. So you can have COVID-19 and maintain it at home and deal with it like flu or the cold, and stay home and let it run its course. But there are times to seek emergency care. Those things look like the person has trouble breathing. They're trying to talk and they can't talk through a full sentence without coughing or stopping for a breath. Persistent pain or pressure in the chest. Confusion or inability to arouse, and that's because that oxygen level isn't getting to their brain. So that's why we see that. Also, they might be bluish, the lips or the face. Those are reasons to seek emergency care, meaning calling 911. And if you're calling 911, either for yourself or the person you're caring for, make sure that operator understands that you have concerns about COVID-19, that they may have been exposed. Screening and testing for COVID-19, unfortunately, this changes. For a while, we were testing people who were in the healthcare field if they were in contact with COVID-19. When COVID-19 became community spread in Kenosha, we couldn't do that anymore because we would have to test every healthcare professional, and we didn't have enough testing or capacity to do that. So right now, they're testing healthcare providers that they know are in contact or having symptoms for COVID-19. Otherwise, in the general public, we are testing if they have a report of symptoms similar to those reported with COVID-19. So the best thing you could do is call your doctor. If you're having any symptoms you're concerned about, then the doctor can determine if you qualify for a test. So if the person you're caring for, you're concerned that they're showing signs, call their medical provider to see if they qualify for a test. And if they say they don't qualify for a test, find out what changes you would see in order to make them qualify so that you can be watchful of any changes. Also, prevention and slowing the spread of COVID-19, steps to take for yourself and for your loved ones. Social distancing is very important, limiting where you're going, and when you're going anywhere, staying at 6 feet from others. Washing your hands often, avoid touching your face. Coughing and sneezing should be done into a tissue or into your elbow. Throw away the tissue, wash your hands if you have coughed or sneezed. Staying home as much as possible limits the amount of exposure. Clean and disinfect commonly touched surfaces, so light switches, handles, door handles, faucet knobs, that kind of thing. Clean and disinfect, wear a facial covering or mask that covers your nose and mouth anytime you're in public. That measure is to protect anything that you may be carrying from getting to other people, not so much from other people's illnesses from getting to you. So we're wearing masks in order to protect others, not necessarily ourselves. What isolation and quarantine looks like. So isolation is done when someone's ill. It's a much more strict, tight isolation. Quarantine is what we're asking kind of the world to do. So that's what we're asking people to do that aren't showing symptoms, have no signs. We don't expect that. This is what we ask of people who we suspect have been exposed but aren't showing symptoms yet. And it, what it means is staying home. Basically the things that we just talked about, but in a more intentional way. So staying home, separating themselves from others by using a separate space. So having their own bedroom. If they're sharing a bedroom, the person who has not been exposed yet should move out of that bedroom. If they have a separate bathroom to use, we're encouraging that. If people don't have a separate bathroom, when the nurse calls and walks through the steps on quarantine, they talk about how to use a community bathroom with others and, you know, bring it in your own towel, bring it in your own supplies, and wiping things down before you leave that bathroom. And avoid sharing personal items, so towels, dishes, bedding, that kind of thing should not be shared with the people in the home, making sure that everything's separate. How to care for yourself and others during this time. Being mindful of routes of transmission. If you're caring for somebody and they have a slight cold, you know, you're wiping their nose or they're using tissues, making sure that those tissues are going into a garbage and that they're able to wash their hands, washing your hands often. Wear a mask and gloves if doing daily cares, anything that you would use in normal circumstances. Washing your hands frequently, monitoring yourself for symptoms. So while you're caring for somebody and being watchful of them, we have to be watchful of ourselves as caregivers. Take your temperature daily if you have a thermometer, or at least make a mental note of how you're feeling every day. The daily temperatures are really important in monitoring this illness. It's very common for fevers with this. Sorry, call coming in. Most importantly, don't push through. So some of those days where you're fighting a headache or body aches or sore throat and you're not quite sure if it's going to develop into anything, make sure you take that time for yourself that day to see if this is going to develop into something or if it can go away with rest and drinking enough water and taking good care of yourself. But those are reasons to not push through, to try to arrange for someone else to take care of that person. You can't take care of them if you become sick. So making sure that you're taking care of yourself. If you find that you are having a fever and you're taking something to reduce that fever, you should not be around your loved ones for 24 hours after you've stopped taking medicine. So taking medicine and then you feel better does not qualify as feeling better. You have to be medicine free in order for that to work. One resource I wanted to alert you to, see if we can go there, is the Kenosha County has developed a webpage to help. It has a lot of joint resources on the page. So I just wanted to give you an overview of what it looks like so that you know where to go for some of the information you're looking for. So the latest news streams are listed here. They do a top 10 questions. Joined with the police department and the county health department, and they answer questions that come in through the website once a week. We have our numbers on here, and we try to keep them up to date as best as possible. Other resources that I found most helpful is the Kenosha County Food Resource Locator. You can click on it, and it brings you to a map and shows you which restaurants do carry out. And where to find resources for people who are scarce on food. Also, the financial resources are in here. People who have been asking about rent assistance, that information is in there. It goes through our Facebook page and the posts that we have and that the police department has. This is, I don't know if I'll be able to go through here. So this is the map. If you click on it, it'll show you how many cases in each area. So they update that. What I found the most helpful though, and the easiest to read is down here, the sources from CDC that goes through the symptoms that we just talked about, what you can do to prevent illness, taking steps to protect yourself, and what to do if you yourself are sick. And then, as usual with all websites, way at the bottom in the fine print, if you have questions that aren't addressed on here, we do have our our email address. It's a general mailbox, and those questions are answered every day, and you'll receive information back.
So, Bridget, I hate to tell you this, but we just got stuck on the last slide. We weren't actually able to see the website.
Oh, okay. It's good to know where I left off. Sorry about that.
That's okay. What I'm thinking we can do is put the address in the chat box. So
okay.
If you can copy that address and put it in the chat, then everybody else can copy it from there.
Okay. Sorry, I'm not familiar with Zoom. We use Teams. I'm trying to get back so that I can.
So, right, chat box. Stop sharing your desktop. That should be on the top panel.
Stop video. Is that stop video?
No, it should say stop sharing.
Remote control. New share. There it is.
Okay, there you go.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Get better.
Okay. So the website is in the chat box.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Are you, do we want to share at this point that the governor has issued an extension on the stay-at-home order?
Yes, is the exact date. I've heard a lot of dates today, but he did extend it. Is that through May 24th?
May 26th is what we're hearing.
Okay.
Over here, but.
Yep.
I know. So that's another part of why we're doing this, because we're going to need to make plans a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Bridget. I think I need to ask you to make me host again, but I'm not sure. Yes. If you can click yourself and say, make Helen host, that would be great. And in the meantime, we're going to ask Renee Miche to share a little bit about some of the resources we can be taking advantage of.
Okay, hello, I'm Renee Miche, one of the long-term care specialists with the ADRC. So kind of wanted to focus in on some of the resources that are available and some of the changes that are in place with the times right now. So when some things are new, some things change, and kind of keep things up to date and resources where people can go to. Helen, I'm going to see if I can share my worksheet.
I have every faith in you.
Okay, I think I did it.
Great.
All right. So, again, what we kind of want to emphasize to people is that the ADRC is open, kind of in a different format. You're not able to come to us, but we are available by telephone. You can go to our website. You can email us. All of our services are still available except for the loan closet, and that is for safety and just dealing with, you know, trying to keep our social distancing under control and providing safe equipment. And that, so we are available Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. We always have website and email. So if you're one that doesn't get access to the computer until late at night, you can email questions and they will be answered usually within 24 hours. And that, if you have crisis at any time, our local crisis line is available 24/7. And that is always can be a great resource with different stressors that may be going on. So just kind of want to reassure that we are still working through the different processes and programs are in place. And so I was just going to jump in with what Bridget was saying and talking about the Kenosha Hub. And that is a great resource for getting all the information based on what's going on in Kenosha. What's the Kenosha resources? And linking you to different things. So that is a great source. It's really important that we look at, we hear a lot of information about COVID. There is a lot of things on the news, and we kind of have to know, where is this information coming? Is it accurate? Is it true? So looking at our sources of where we can get good information. And so that's where we're looking to our hub, the CDC. And FEMA actually has a very interesting rumor control page that kind of looks at some of the different things you might be hearing. So it can be an interesting way to look to see what are some of the rumors going around. And then kind of wanted to focus on the finances. This is also on the hub page. It's been developed by the UW Extension. This page is really great at looking at all the different resources of different financial situations that are impacting people now. They are saying 1 in 3 family are impacting some type of financial hardship with what's going on. And it walks you through the different steps for each thing. And so that really is the best way to get some great up-to-date information. They have wonderful mindful money moments that have short videos. And they also have people that you can call and discuss some of your financial issues and how to maybe direct that and get those questions answered. And so they have questions on energy assistance, if your income has changed, food share, some of the different federal and state benefits that might be coming through. And that is updated usually daily. So that is just really a good place to go for up-to-date information. Also, with all different types of disasters, there can be issues with fraud and people trying to scam people. And they have developed a disaster fraud hotline. And so it's the same for whatever the natural disaster might be. But this is the federal line. There's a hotline and an email where you can report your concerns of scams. If it's an elder member having issues with being scammed, they can also call our office and we can see if we can help them through that too. And then the next section I wanted to focus on was food. UW Extension, again, has done a great resource on all the emergency food needs. This is changing daily, and the food list that for emergency food pantries, meal program, senior dining, meals is changing a lot. Different things are opening up. Churches are offering programs. So what was our standard food pantry list isn't really current with the times. So this is a really good source of where to get that emergency information, how to get that food. With all of these, if you're noticing you don't have access to the websites and you need help looking at some of this, please call the ADRC and we can help you work through this. And that. Some tips with the grocery stores, there's different ways of navigating the grocery stores right now and trying to get food into your home, limiting your exposure of having to go out to the home. Most of the stores are offering, like, the first 2 hours are towards their seniors or people with prior, you know, with immune system issues or caregivers. Though they aren't enforcing this issue, that is their slower time. So it's kind of for people that are, say, you know, are healthy and well, try not to shop during those times. It is also when the store is usually its cleanest and had the least amount of foot traffic through the store. Most of the stores are offering some form of online ordering and you can drive pick up. where they'll bring it out to your car. And that, and they also, there are some through different apps will offer delivery.
I'm listening, something like Kenosha County for.
What you doing to lunch meat?
Huh?
You took out some lunch meat the other day.
It's in the refrigerator somewhere.
Okay, I'll get back to that. So just looking at grocery stores as options for the pickup service. And some do offer apps. They might have minimums for delivery. You can order things online and pick up usually within a day or two. What we're noticing is that weekends, holiday, Easter week was really a difficult week to find deliveries. So if you can time it, so Tuesdays or a Wednesday or, you know, you might have better luck with getting the times that you're looking for. Tuesdays and Wednesdays are probably also going to be times when the grocery stores are not as busy as going on a Saturday. So those are some ways of trying to get around some of the not having as many people and being able to be that distance better. And then again on this, it's best to really contact the individual websites. If you do not have access to a smartphone or the webs in the internet, call us and we can help plan through some options for that. Then again, also back to the food pantries and that, and the meal sites, they are all making their food so that it is as much contactless as possible, so they will be just having that food already prepared in a box ready to hand over. Same with the food, it's all going to be something to go and easy to take with you. The list also does include resources for children, which is not something often on our list, but people are, you know, being affected in their families. Pharmacy, as Susan had talked about, you know, having those medications ready, having them to be able to get them. Some pharmacies that weren't offering delivery might be offering delivery now, or they might be doing mail options. Also, your insurance company that you get your drugs through may be offering special promotions to mail medications. So it's kind of looking at what are those options for you. There are a couple pharmacies that do delivery in the area, and you know, if that is something that you're interested in, you can be look at switching to do that too. They are going to, you know, also have their busy times for delivery also, but there are a couple pharmacies that deliver throughout Kenosha County, so that's even also in Western Kenosha. Then I kind of want to just end on transportation options. For transportation, most of our changes are pretty much still available, kind of a limited availability, and they are looking to make it so that they can keep that social distance available. And so Kenosha Transit bus lines are working on their usually on their normal service hours. Right now, they're asking people to use the back of the bus and no fares. Caravan Paratransit is also not charging at this time. And really, again, we're trying to keep that contact and keep that distance. Western Kenosha Transit does not have its regular routes right now, but are doing door-to-door. And they have reduced their rate during this time. So looking at those options, volunteer transport is still an option, a little bit lower capacity at this time because a lot of our volunteers are over the ages and they need to, you know, take precautions for themselves, but they're still working through it. So as with all our resources, they're available. We tell you to kind of check in and make sure, you know, how are they operating. So one of the last things I'll take back, let's see if I can get us to our resource database. So our resource database is available. Can everybody see that?
Nope.
Okay, let me try this again. How about now?
Yes.
Okay. So if you go to the ADRC homepage, one of the things will be resources. And we try to keep all our resources that we have in office always available on the, you know, on our website. And they are as up to date as our resources in our office. And some days, maybe a little bit more up to date. So we have a searchable database that's available at all times. And really the easiest way to do is you search it by a keyword or a letter. So you just click on the alphabet. And one, I was just gonna pick for just another meal option, is meal delivery. So then it'll bring up the information that's available in our area. And so a couple of these are different options for having frozen meals delivered. And I will just click on Home Style Direct. They'll give you their contact information and how to start that process. So that is something that is available, and you can search at different times when we aren't available in the office.
Renee, since you're already on the website, one of the other things I wanted to point out to folks is the file of life. When we talk about making backup plans. So if you go to our homepage, yep, and then scroll down to emergency preparedness or up to emergency preparedness. And then on that page, we have a file of life, which is something that all of the emergency response folks in Kenosha County know to look for when they come into the home of an older adult or a person with disabilities or other concerns. And it gives them a snapshot of the emergency medical information. And if you scroll down a little bit, Renee, you can, that's too far. If you go to, I thought there was a fillable form here.
Yes, you can download a complete fillable. Oh, it's doing another page. But there is a link to do a fillable page.
Yes, where you can then save that file of life onto your computer. You give us a call and we will send you the little magnet container that goes on your refrigerator. So I think that's a really helpful tool also.
And could I ask Renee just real quickly before you end and get off the website is to go back to the home page also. And I just want to mention the content that if you go towards the very bottom, used to be towards the top, but there's a caregiver contact list right there. We are sending out a couple times a week information for caregivers, some on COVID, some on how to cope, a lot of what I'm going to talk about, but if you'd like to sign up and get that direct, then if you can sign up there, we'll take care of that. Thanks, Renee.
Okay, so that kind of ends my part. One of the areas didn't get a chance to get to is social isolation. If you're looking for some more resources for seniors, please give us a call and we can kind of talk about that more, or maybe we can talk about that more in the future, but definitely we have resources at the ADRC on that.
So, thank you, Renee.
Thank you.
Okay, Lisa, take us home.
I have a quick question about the magnet. Do you send those then by mail to people? Is that how you're doing it then?
Yes. We can send you the whole packet by mail. I really like the idea of filling it out electronically if you have a computer and saving it to your computer, because then it's really easy to update it. And if you choose that option, then we'll just send you the little red magnet. But either way, just give us a call. Go ahead, Lisa.
Okay, thanks. So I do work with the Caregiver Coalition and teach and oversee the Powerful Tools for Caregivers class. So my section is really taking care of yourself as a caregiver. We want you all to really take care of yourself, because as caregivers, one of the most important things we can do for both ourselves and for the person for whom we're caring is to take care of ourselves. If we're not feeling well physically or mentally, you know, how are we going to care for others? So it's really important right now to balance the chaos that we're experiencing with good habits, with routines that are going to make you feel strong and healthy and capable and able to take on those daily challenges that we're facing of doing long distance caregiving, which in the past that could be, you know, across the county, the state, the country, and now it's literally 10 or 15 feet away is long distance. So we want you to take care of your own health and to focus on yourself as much as you can. In order to physically take care of yourself, it's really important to drink a lot of fluids, plenty of water. It's real easy to get into an unhealthy habit, which I think I have sort of started, of grabbing a cup of coffee to wake up and keep going, maybe a glass of wine at night to go to sleep. But you really want to stay with just plain water and keep yourself hydrated. The standard, of course, that we all know of is 8 glasses of 8 ounces. The other option you can use is, you know, half of your body weight would equal the amount of ounces that you should drink every day. Staying hydrated is really important because it keeps your body functioning and it helps you to avoid the negative effects of dehydration, which oftentimes are headaches, muscle pains, things like that. excuse me. The second thing we want to do is prioritize your sleep, and it's a real challenge right now when we're feeling stressed. Get a lot of sleep and get good quality sleep, but you want to make sure that you maintain, either establish a routine if you don't already have one, or maintain one. You know, read before bed, maybe take a warm bath, some deep breathing exercises, maybe some meditation. excuse me, I'm sorry. We want to try and avoid news late at night and maybe social media that can cause us some distress. It's really important to continue to eat balanced meals. I know when this all started, I ran out and hoarded a lot of food items. It's not the time now to sit down and try to consume all those. You want to have, you know, healthy fruits and vegetables, items that are high in nutritional value that are really going to provide you a lot of energy. It's easy to skip meals and maybe to grab the easiest thing that is there and is convenient. But I, you know, I'm working from home, so it was easy for me the other day to make a big pot of soup. I threw things together, let it sit on the stove, and then went off and into my dining room, and instead of eating there, I am working. So prepare things like soups and chilies, maybe easy to make meals that you can throw in the freezer and then pull out when things are getting even more hectic and chaotic. We want to make sure that we're continuing to exercise. I used to go to the gym 3 to 4 times a week. The gym is closed. So what I'm doing, I have a 2-story home. I'm running up and down the stairs several times a day for no reason, but just to get myself up and moving. Obviously, 30 minutes of exercise is the best, but if you can even take, you know, 5 or 10 minutes at a time and do something like that, go outside, take a walk, walk around your house, walk around your block. Like I said, run up and down the stairs like I've been doing. the exercise is going to give you a lot of stamina and energy, and it's going to reduce a lot of the stress that we might have. Another thing we want to do is maintain or develop a routine if we don't already have one. You know, we're experiencing a lot of chaos right now, and what is our response? It's easy to just kind of react in the moment. But if you have a schedule or a plan, you'll feel much more in control. So get up in the morning, you know, make sure that you're eating a good breakfast. Make a to-do list of things that you want to accomplish during the day. And as you finish those, cross them off. You know, that's going to make you feel good, like you've accomplished something. It's going to make the day more positive for you. You don't want to wake up and immediately turn on that news, because we all know what we're going to see on the news. So, you know, take some time for yourself. This is a time where we're home, and how many people are able to get up in the morning and watch the sunrise? That's a great way to start your day now. You know, and just look at that and think of the positive things that are happening in your life aside from all this chaos. You're waking up and seeing a sunrise, which maybe you haven't had the opportunity to do in the past. We want to avoid information overload, and Renee talked about that, about some great websites to go to that have really credible information. So, you know, look for positive information and credible information related to COVID, and don't pay attention to the social media posts, the Twitter posts, the Facebook posts that are just throwing a lot of rumors and not true or not credible information. Really important to try and connect with others. We are social distancing, but that doesn't mean we can't be social. So if you can maintain connections to other people, that is the most important thing that's going to keep you on balance and happy and looking forward to, you know, what's coming next, which is a return to some kind of normalcy. You want to try and reach out to people by like Facebook, teleconferencing, video chats, things like that. I'm in a Saturday morning ladies group with my church, and we used to obviously meet in person. We can't do that anymore. So the first week we couldn't do that, we tried telephone. That worked, but it was kind of cumbersome, and we're now doing Zoom. And, you know, you have to look for the humor in the situation. The first day the first week we did Zoom, we had a whole variety of people who knew technology and had no clue about technology. So it was really interesting, fun, and a challenge to try and get everybody on there. You know, maybe some of us even experienced that today, trying to get on this Zoom meeting. But things like that. Look at the fun in that, and the excitement of learning things and accomplishing new things. The other thing is we want to ask for help. There's a lot of people out there that aren't caregivers that want to help other people. So, you know, getting back to technology, maybe a lot of us don't know or aren't familiar with technology, but I bet you there's a kid down the street or next door that's not in school anymore and they are whizzes at computers. So maybe call them and tell them, hey, I'd love to get on a video chat with family. How do I do this? And they can very easily walk you through or talk you through rather, how to use some of this technology that's available to us. And, you know, reach out for help if you need help getting groceries and things like that, or just to talk with people and, you know, relieve some of that social isolation that we're feeling. So we want to talk about managing and coping with stress, and caring for yourself and coping with stress is what's going to make us all stronger. But we do want to recognize some of the early warning signs of experiencing stress, which can be irritability, sleeplessness, overeating, fatigue, apathy, headaches, things like that. And so what we want to do is look at what we can and cannot change. Excuse me, we can change our mind, our body, our physical environment, what we're consuming, what our response is, what our response is to the situation. And so the changes we can make is to change the situation. So I'm going to use an example of being able to visit a loved one. We can't do that anymore, but what we can do is visit virtually using some of this technology that we have available to us. We can change our perception of the situation. So we can't visit in person, but we can visit virtually. And rather than looking at, oh, I can't visit in person, be thankful for the fact that we can do it virtually. And then the third thing is to change your response to the situations. Sometimes we can't change the situation, but we can change our response. So we can't visit in person, we can visit virtually, and now we can do it every day of the week rather than, you know, maybe the once or twice a week or once or twice a month that we were able to do before, because we can do it virtually rather than having to hop in a car and, you know, drive to be able to do those things. So really think about accepting the things you can change, change the things you can change and accept the things that you can't. So I also want to talk about some of the symptoms of stress if you're experiencing those. Excuse me, my other laptop just got tiny. You know, fear and worry about your own health or the health of your loved ones that you can't get to. Changes in sleep patterns, eating patterns, things like not being able to concentrate, some forgetful. Everyone's going to respond to these situations differently, but I'm when I talk next about ways to cope with stress, that will help you respond to those changes. So again, I want to mention, you know, the first and most important thing is really to take care of ourselves, eat healthy, well-balanced meals, exercise regularly, keep your fluid intake, excuse me, normal or whatever, and then get plenty of sleep. One of the things we talk about in Powerful Tools is to really focus on yourself. And it's really, I know everyone's going through a lot of emotions about not being able to see their loved ones, but we really have to focus some of our day on ourselves and how we're taking care of ourselves. Caregivers are loving, compassionate people because they care for others, and that is because they care for others. I mentioned taking a break from the news. You want to avoid watching, reading, or listening to a lot of sources. Really get your information from reliable, credible sources, like we talked about before, the CDC. The Wisconsin State DHS site is a good place to go. We want to avoid social media, such as Twitter and Facebook, that can have misleading or inaccurate information, and know the facts. Bridget was really good about giving us a lot of facts, so focus on that information and not all the other stuff that's out there that might not be accurate. So some of the things I'd like you to do is try to develop a list of effective coping strategies. Things like things that you like to do or that give you some enjoyment, write them down. And then when you're feeling stressed or feel like you have some high anxiety, go to that list, use them. Things like going for a walk, doing some deep breathing exercises, aromatherapy. I mentioned watching the sunrise or sunset and reflecting on the positive things that either happened in your day or happened yesterday, and saving those for to help you relax. Write down as many positive things that you can think of. I know that can be very difficult, especially at this time of chaos. I remember when I was doing caregiving with my mother, you know, I was working full time, I was taking care of a family. A lot of things were going on, and it was really hard to try and figure out what good was going on in my life. So I started writing down just silly things, you know, watching a squirrel run across the road on a high wire, you know, things that you wouldn't really, sorry, that's my timer, I have a few seconds left. So just try and make sure that you keep a lot of positive things going on in your life and focus on that. The ADRC has updated their mental health pages. Mental health problems can present both as physical and as cognitive issues. And, you know, you may never have experienced mental health concerns in the past, but we're under a lot of stress. So their website has some really great information and links to other sites that can help you. And if you are feeling really, really stressed out, you know, give the ADRC a call, give the crisis line a call, and they will be there to help you and hold your hand and really get you through this. So some other ideas for reducing stress would be to phone, text, or email your loved ones, use some virtual visits. We're using Zoom, there's Skype, there's free conference calling, GoToMeeting. Some great apps for your phone would be FaceTime, Duo, WhatsApp, Google Hangouts, Facebook Messenger. Another nice thing is to maybe do a handwritten letter or card. How often do we do that? It just, people don't write handwritten or don't send handwritten cards, but how nice to get something from your loved one, you know, that they, even if it's a short, quick little two sentence note, it's just great to have that arrive. Some other great things are deep breathing exercises. You want to breathe in through your nose, breathe in through your nose and exhale through your mouth while slowly counting to maybe five. And that tends to slow your brain down and obviously helps you get things under control and a little bit more calm. Meditation is a great thing to do. That too slows you down and focuses yourself. You can use music. There's a lot of online meditation, free online meditation sites. Just Google that. Laugh. I mean, my husband and I Zoomed with my son and daughter-in-law and their new children, 9-month-old grandbabies, and there was an app on an opportunity to put effects on our little Zoom picture, which turned my face into a fish. And the kids, the expressions on their faces made us laugh so much. We had tears streaming down because we were laughing so hard at watching these kids' reactions to us turning into little fish. So things like that can really, really help you. A couple of other things would be taking a cold cloth and putting it around your neck near the carotid artery, sitting down, closing your eyes, and again, counting slowly. That helps you to just bring your stress level down. Journaling is a great idea. Stretching, where you think of like tensing your body, starting with your toes, your feet, your ankles, and moving up to your shoulders and head, can always help you. So these are just a lot of ideas that we have to help you. There is on the website, when Helen took us there very early in our presentation, those documents, there's a really good document called Tools for Releasing Stress. It has all kinds of ideas of things, activities you can do to try and keep yourself occupied, calm yourself, and slow yourself down so that you can cope a little bit better with this whole situation. So I think that should do it for me.
Okay, thanks, Lisa. So this is where we really want to hear from you all, either what your questions are or what we haven't covered that you had hoped we were going to talk about, or just some time to say, I need to problem solve this, or this is where I need support. So since we're a small group, I think we will be okay in just unmuting ourselves. The folks on the phone, I believe you have to unmute by hitting *6, and you don't have the visual cues, but we will work with you and hopefully not talk over each other. The other option, of course, is to put your question in the chat or your thought. So.
This is Tara, and I got a few questions. I'm not quite sure if this is going to be for Bridget or Renee. I'm wondering, from a caregiver standpoint, when you have a person that you're caregiving for that is at probably the highest ranking of needs, like there's a ranking order of needs for the person, and so when they are ranked at a high need, can't move themselves type, if they're a one-person assist, a two-person assist, they're now alone going to appointments. They're alone if something medically goes wrong. Is there anybody working from the state side? Because we know these people. We know that this person has these conditions and they really need one person to be with them. Are they working on anything to allow people at a certain level, cognitively, physically, who really need a one-person assist for sure, to go in with these people, especially if that caregiver is living in the home with them. If you talk to infectious disease medical professionals, you know, they kind of say that you're one of the same. If you're in close contact with that person you're living with, you're in the same environment, you're always with them, you're basically like them. As far as infectious disease, you're one, you know, but yet you can't get in the door to help them.
That's a really important question, Tara. And I will tell you from my perspective that the Federal Administration for Community Living came out with an official statement that for folks who have difficulty communicating and or need the physical support of a caregiver, that they have every right to have that person in with them in a medical facility.
Okay, so now, for instance, if you're going to a medical appointment and they're saying patients only in the door, but you are that person who needs to have your caregiver with you, can you overrule that, or you're not going to be allowed in the door to get your treatment?
Well, at that point, I think you're kind of stuck. Certainly you can say the Administration for Community Living says this person has the right to a support person in the medical appointment, and I am happy to wear whatever PPE you want me to.
Right.
But that's
a real concern for people at those levels. Which is making their stress and anxiety extremely high. Sometimes they don't know how to communicate. They'll have it. I'll know what I want to do. Then they get in there and they're so nervous, they lost everything that they needed to say or find out. Getting them help putting back together, you know, taking their coat off, putting their coat back on, you know. It's very difficult for these people in time, especially when they can't move, they can't write. You know, journaling's nice, but they can't write. You know, going for a walk, that'd be nice. They can't walk. They can't take care of themselves at all. And so when you're relying on caregivers, sometimes even to wipe your nose, now you don't have that person there. So especially when they're short-staffed, I'm a little nervous with our nursing in all of medical care facilities, because they're taking hospital facilities because they own the employee basically as far as employment. They're wiping them out of these facility, the clinics and stuff to bring them over to the hospital because they're short-staffed. Is there a process for that, that they, the government, make sure that these nurses are screened before they're coming back into these private clinics? You know what I mean?
Well, I can see that Bridget has her microphone off, so let's let her weigh in.
I got a lot of questions. I apologize.
No, okay. I think all your concerns are valid. You're used to being the sole caregiver, and now we're asking, the nurses are asking you to relinquish that and allow us to take care of your loved one for you. So I can understand.
Yeah, especially when you have someone who has had a condition for 18 years and has never went to an appointment at all, ever, by themselves, ever.
Yes, and you're the best person right now for the job.
That anxiety can go real high for them. Yeah.
I encourage you to advocate for yourself and for your loved one. Call ahead, ask them what the procedures are, tell them your concerns. I'm concerned. I've always been the one with them. They won't understand what's going on. It might be a matter of you need to explain to them what is needed, and then they'll make accommodations. But if they can't make accommodations, and that should only be for the safety of others, or if they're worried about a risk to yourself or to others. But most care facilities want to accommodate and have that help. They will be short-staffed. They're going to need help.
I think, too, though, if you're in a hot spot for certain ones, I know Milwaukee, it's shut down. It doesn't matter. Every day I've been calling, you know, and they're frustrated. We get mm-hmm. it. And we all understand it. But from what point does it really impact a person who relies on another person to really care for them to now they're alone in right. these situations? And at what point, because we don't know where this is at. Next week, it could be different. The following week could be there. 5 months from now, we could be in the same situation. We don't know.
And that's what we're trying to balance right now. Because we don't know, we're trying to take every precaution for the patients and make sure that they're safe. So if it is truly necessary that they are seen by their doctor, it might be necessary to let go of some of that control and have them seen by the doctor. And then when you get them back, you are able to resume care. And the healthcare facilities they are taking on the role of the family right now as well. They understand that people are distanced from each other that they're used to having. So they're taking that into consideration. So again, advocating for yourself, reaching out if you think something is being asked of you that you can't fulfill.
And just because this is the reality now, this is the reality of long-term care patients, that most likely you're not even dealing with the people in the office who would normally know how to deal with you. You're now dealing with the nurse who normally does the callbacks, because everybody else is in the hospital side as inpatient care. So it's very challenging for them. I just had a situation a couple weeks ago. You know, first time she's ever had to go in by herself, was asked to, can you please take my hat off? No, you can keep it on. No, I would take her hat off. So, I mean, these are important to the people who are disabled. And that's what I was just wondering.
Right.
We don't know where this is going. I'm just hoping someone, and I'm sorry, I don't think it's Helen, but I think your name is coming up as Helen. You kind of had said it. They're working on if they are a person to allow one. I just wanted to see if anybody from the government side, DHS side, is really looking at that to help protect the needs of a person who really needs to have someone else there, especially when they live together and they're exposed to the same viruses.
So I want to make sure everybody's getting a little time to ask their question, but yes, the answer is the Administration for Community Living is doing some advocacy around that. And I think Bridget gave you a terrific answer, Tara, in terms of advocating and calling ahead and explaining the situation. I thought I saw Diane with her microphone off wanting to ask a question.
Okay, that's me right here.
There you go. Great.
Okay, this doesn't sound as important as some of the other ones, but I have a relative who brings food that they pick up from a grocery store, and some people say, oh, don't touch the plastic bags, and some people say wipe everything down. This is for our nurse. What's the recommendation on what to do when groceries come to your house?
So I have seen different information. There are guidelines out there as far as how to bring things into the home and wipe them down so that there's no transmission, although it's too soon to know if COVID-19 can be transmitted from a surface, such as from grocery shelves to a person. We just don't have the information yet. So there is guidelines out there on how to wipe things down when you're bringing them into your house or letting them sit for 3 days if you can. And it's a recommendation. It's not a requirement. Some of it might be so that you yourself feel better about bringing that in. And other people, you know, make their own personal choices on that. If somebody is bringing it to you and you accept it in, you have to wash your hands once you're done, you know, cleaning it off. So you're trying to, you know, take care of any germs that might be on the surfaces, and to eliminate it from coming into your house. Not a clear answer.
No. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure. So we have two questions coming in on the chat. One is from Lisa. Do you need to provide documentation before you go in? And I'm thinking that was related to Tara's question. And again, I would say that a conversation is the place to start with your healthcare provider. Now, we do have a lot of different supportive decision-making type of relationships in Wisconsin. We actually have a supported decision maker document where a person may be their own person, they may be have capacity for decision making, but need some support. And you can formally appoint someone to be that person for you. And I think that that strengthens your ability to advocate and interact with healthcare professionals.
That's not true. That's not true. Because I have all of that set up and you still can't. Like you can't, they're taking it, which I get that there's a hard stance for everybody's protection, not even getting in the door. You're allowed to bring them to a corridor and that's it. But from that, even if you have all these things in place, you just don't have, even if you had guardianship, you're still not getting in. So that's why I was just wondering, is there a special, you know, document or process if you are in that situation? Because everybody's at a different level on what they need, you know.
Well, guardianship is the highest level of responsibility for another human being. So if that is the situation and people are still running into trouble, I would reach out to the Ombudsman's Office or to Adult Protective Services for some guidance in that. I did want to just pause for a second because today is April 16th and that is National Healthcare Decision Day. The day after you're supposed to have paid your taxes is the day where you can then talk about what your end-of-life wishes are with the people who need to understand that. So I did want to just put a little push out there for completing powers of attorney for healthcare for the people that you are taking care of as well as yourself, because you never know when something could happen and somebody may need to step in and speak for you on your behalf around what your end of life wishes would be. You know, certainly, my husband is my agent, and we have been talking about, well, would you want a ventilator if you got sick? These are the conversations that have to happen in general and certainly specifically now. So the document exists on the Department of Health Services website. It's just been updated recently. So if you go to DHS and then you use their search bar for advanced directive, you can find it online. Otherwise, you can call the ADRC and we're happy to mail one to you. Normally, we have appointments to guide people through that paperwork. Those are suspended for now, but we certainly would help you over the phone if you had questions about the document. So I just wanted to put that out there. Someone else asked if there is a way to watch this from the beginning because they might have missed some good resources. And my hope is that we have been recording it and then I will figure out how to post it somewhere. So it is a yes based on our technical abilities. Okay, any other questions?
I do, sorry. So we had talked about expanding your care plan, you know, resources of your people to help support you. But when you are someone who is autoimmune compromised type person and you really need your advising to be quarantined, and you've been quarantined now since probably before March, and we're being advised that we will be quarantined at least minimum to June, July to re-talk about the conversation. In that, I've been very advised by medical professionals to shut down a lot of supports that were coming in home for the person you're caregiving for. Two sides to that is, one, how do you expand when you're being advised to shut down? Two, you worry about budgets, because normally in a long-term care program, you know, you don't utilize that money, you're going to lose it the next following year. They say it don't, but that's, we've been doing this for a long time, it's true. And now I'm being told that's not going to happen. But where's our protection as far as like those participants that medically they're shutting services down because of risk? Will not lose those services, but again, how would you expand your care support service if you're having to shut it all down, really, other than the people who are living with you?
Anybody want to take a shot at that? Because that's a complicated question. And I think
I apologize.
Don't apologize. It's all right. I guess I would just say these are some of the new realities that we are all struggling through, is how do you hold that tension between demonstrating need while at the same time shutting services down?
Well, that's right. I think I'm not looking for you to have the answer. I know this is all new. I think I'm looking for you guys to bring it to you guys, so you guys can go bring it to your guys' weekly to figure out. These are things we're dealing with in real life. Like, for instance, you might have a participant, which I'm going to bring this up, Renee, because I privately messaged her. You know, I deal with a lot of people all in the community at all different levels of all different kinds of needs, along with being a caregiver for my own family member. Now, we have a lot of people who are on like the food service, so they get like EBT resources. A lot of those people can't leave their homes, but now you can't do like an Instacart and use your EBT. You can't, you know what I mean? So Renee had a great word, Walmart does do that. I think that some of these things need to be pushed out to those long-term people who have been advised to be on a strict quarantine. They can't go into a store at all. Like we're not allowed to go into a store at all. I have to rely on people to come and bring me things. I have to do all the things, like you disinfect, you let it sit. You got to take every precaution out there because the risk is high. Impact could be huge. So in those cases, though, what do you advise for those people, which now we know Walmart does it, which is great. But advocating with some of these companies to say, hey, as you're making changes, because they're making changes every day on more improvements, right? They're starting to help with more social distancing and putting crowd controls in place in stores. But where are they going to help with the people with the EBT? Because, you know, now I just found this out, Walmart. I've been trying to find a resource. You can't find it. I just found it out today to help advise someone. So those are things that I think are at the mind of people who are stuck in their homes. You know, now I got to spend money to buy groceries because I can't use my card. I think that it's knowing your medical rights going into these facilities. The other question and problem that I'm having too is about your triage. You know, you're getting told, no ER, you're not going to be transferred to where you need to be. But at those points, they say triage from home, but who's triaging from home? I mean, like, it's, you're kind of in a stuck and you get it, but there's not a real clear direction.
I agree, and I so appreciate all the concerns you are raising here, Tara. I do see that we have a caller that has unmuted themselves. That 673, and I'm wondering if there's a question coming there.
Yes, I just had a quick question. Do you have, and it's regarding expanding your care team. I am the primary, I guess, caregiver for my elderly parents. And I have, you know, reached out and to them, you know, for help, but I don't want, of course, anyone, you know, in contact with them other than myself, you know, to be safe. I was wondering if you had any resources or talking points to pull them in, you know, in say other ways without causing confrontation. You know, example, you know, them taking all the measures possible for them to stay healthy just in case that I do get sick and we need that backup plan.
Susan?
Well, I think we have to understand that these are extraordinary times and it's not business as usual. And maybe a place to start is explaining, helping them to understand this and expressing your concerns. And maybe finding out what their fears are about expanding that care team and starting there. What do you think, Helen?
You know, I think there's all kinds of ways to try and communicate with each other. I tend to go with the direct route, which is, here's where I'm at. I need to know that my bench is fit and safe. Because if I'm not available, we gotta put our bench in play. So tell me what you're doing to keep yourself fit and safe.
Right. Great. Thank you.
And these conversations are not usually a once and done. You know, it takes introducing it and bringing up it up again and. Sometimes you can appeal to older parents by, this would really help me, mom and dad, if we did this. And if they don't see the need for their sake, you know, they may make some changes for yours. But it does usually take more than one conversation. And I'd be happy to speak with you about it more if you want to call the ADRC and we can brainstorm together too.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And I think Debbie King has a question.
Yeah, I do. I live with my, well, I don't live with them. They live with me, my elder parents and my sister who had a transplant several years ago. My sister is still working. She works part-time in a municipality and they won't let her stay home. So I don't know what to do. I don't know, is there any way, what resources would I have as far as that go, or would she have? Because I'm afraid she's, number one, going to get something and bring it into our house. They won't close the municipality, and it's a two-girl office. They're closed on Fridays, but, you know, it still doesn't help her going out into the community. Granted, I told her for election, I said, you are not going there. I don't care what they say. But I, you know, she's really worried too about losing her job, you know, and I'm worried, like I said, I'm disabled. Mom and dad live with us too. So she brings something in here, or even one of the caretakers, you're talking five people are all over 60, could be wiped out in, you know, just one act of somebody contracting this. Is there anything that you can tell me as far as resources for that?
Bridget?
I don't have any resource to just share with you, but I do want to tell you that's a common issue right now. The public health nurses are part of the contact tracing. And so when we have a positive case and we have to notify the case and all the people they live with and everybody that's been in their circle for 2 weeks, that's a challenge. We have to ask them to not go to work, but some places of work are not honoring that. There's there's no way to force that unless they're having symptoms or they have a positive test. So the challenges you've just described, you're not alone in it. We're trying to do the best we can with the information that we have at the time we have it.
Is there any way that my sister could be fired from her job, though, for saying, hey, this is what's going on. I have a medical condition. I cannot come into work. Or would that, which you guys probably wouldn't know, but would that fall under the Americans with Disability Act for her?
It depends, because if she has not yet been known to have any contact with anybody, she's not yet in that category, although it's a matter of time. If she were to be in contact with somebody, that could become a different case. But I also want to address, I can hear that fear. And I know that everybody's very afraid of COVID-19, but there are a lot of people who have come in contact with it, not shown any symptoms, never contracted anything. There are people that test positive and do okay with the symptoms. And I know that we have, we have expressed so much fear because of how dangerous it can be very quickly, but that fear plays into it too. So I want you to know that we know the signs to look for. The public health is trying to make sure that it goes slowly enough that our hospital system can handle it. And right now it is in Kenosha. It is handling it. So I want to address that fear that you're afraid that it's going to come into your home and wipe everybody out. And I'm sorry that you have that fear. That's been what's kind of propelled our country ahead. But know that if you were by a case, if you were identified as having exposure, that you'd be working with the health department. The health department has been working with employers and helping them understand the dangers of having someone there that's been exposed and how that plays out into the rest of their workforce.
And I'm just wondering, too, if she's taking the precautions they recommend for people in high traffic areas. Not that she is, but still maybe some exposure, such as coming home, maybe disrobing in the garage, coming in and taking a shower, and just following those health prevention measures at work. And then when she arrives home, and I'm also wondering about if she would be appropriate at all, and I have no idea, for the Family Medical Leave Act.
Yeah, she is just part-time at this municipality. And so I don't think that would apply, but I appreciate what you guys are saying. She tries to wear a mask, at work. I made her one, but they're telling you to do three layers now, one with flannel in the middle. And she had that on. She said it's too hard to breathe for her at work with that. So she stopped wearing it.
Is she working with the public, or is she working? It sounds like she has one other person in her office.
She does have one other person in the office. Both of my guests right now are fine, but there are people coming in the office constantly.
And is that public, or is that other coworkers?
It's public. Some people work within the town, but yeah, like I said, that's why I told her she's not going to be there for the election last week. So
and Debbie, I don't know if this can help, but I also had another situation with someone else who was kind of in that situation, and they went to the medical professional and had the doctor write a letter so that they could bring it to their employer. And it helped make them accommodations to limit those risks even more. So you put them out, they might help risk the list of not putting them by the public.
Okay, ladies, thank you so much for your help. I do appreciate it.
Well, we are over our time. I wanted to make sure folks who had questions and pressing needs were able to get those met. I'm wondering if a call like this would be helpful again, and maybe where we could just do some general brainstorming. If anybody has thoughts about that, I welcome those thoughts in the chat. Feel free to say yes, no.
I think that's a great idea. That's a great idea. I just think even to help support for caregivers, or even for us to help bring it back to you, like, hey, this is what we're experiencing in real life out here, you know, or in different counties. Like, when you're in Kenosha County, but all your specialists are in a whole nother county, and then they're one of the hot spots, you're not really going to be able to go to your specialties. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of got to stay in your county if that county is even higher risk than your own county, you know? So I think it's very critical right now for caregivers to be able to talk to caregivers, because you're the one who's really honestly responsible. You're the one to keep everybody maintained. You're the one who to keep everybody safe. And so having a support for them, I think, is very, very encourageable. And I think you guys are doing a great job. I really appreciate every one of you for really doing what you're doing, especially Bridget. It's got to not be easy. And so I just really applaud all of you ladies for really advocating for everybody as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tara. Any last comments from my panel? Bridget?
I want to say thank you for inviting me and for everybody on the call today. We realize that you're the very first defense for our very vulnerable population. Mm-hmm. So right back at you, we appreciate what you guys are doing too. We need you.
Renee?
Just that if you continue to have questions, reach out to the ADRC.
Mm-hmm. And I would second that.
Lisa, you're muted.
Oh. And take care of yourself.
Okay.
Focus on yourself.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. Be careful out there. Take good care of yourself and the people who count on you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.